extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my single solitary, just the one partner in soccer today. It is Tuesday. No Labor Day show for us. I know you missed that. But Matt Doyle is here. David Goss is not here. He is married. He could have been here, but we said, you know what? This is your honeymoon, Dave. This is your ETR honeymoon, man. You enjoy it. You get away. You get on a beach somewhere, and by beach, I mean MLS Today. What a wonderful. And then Kalen, I don't know what happened to Kalen, but we'll see him next week, and it's all good.
Kalen was a late scratch.
Late scratch. Yeah. There you go. It pulled up in warm-ups a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, that hammy, it's just been acting up on him lately. Obviously, we were not here Monday because of the holiday weekend. Hope you enjoyed that with your friends and family. My understanding is that Doyle enjoyed it more than I did. It was solo daddy weekend for me. Happy birthday to Mindy, by the way. Today is her birthday. She will never listen, hear, or know of this. Mm-hmm. But know that
good to check that box.
Just get it everywhere. Just, you know, broadcast it to the whole world. Like, you know, I love my wife and I'm a father, in case you didn't know. But Doyle, how was your holiday weekend, man, before we get into the nitty gritty?
It was great. The David Goss and Megan
wedding
spectacular week. It was like, it just kept going and going and going. And I got to tell you, I'm a little older than most of our friends, Weeby. So trying to hang into the wee small hours, I do not bounce back like I used to, because, you know, Gasman's a machine. Shout out Abner. Oh, so like these guys, they just keep going and going.
They're doing more than you're doing.
Yeah,
let's just say.
They are. And they're in the prime of their lives, and they're living like it. Absolutely living like it.
Look, we don't want to, you know, it's Dave and Megan's special day, and we're extremely happy for them. I am heartbroken to not have been there, but I'll get over it. It's not about me. Give me a little nugget. Was there a soccer connection here? This is Dave, so I need to know how they sort of brought that aspect of their life into the... into the holy matrimony.
Yeah, so on Friday evening, they rented out a field at, you know, down in Brooklyn, and they had it was like 20 people. So like they had a pickup game, you know, the all Megan's friends sort of
this
cinematic
is the, all Megan's friend. Yes, all Megan's friends is the co-ed team that they have run for many years now.
So there were about 20 people. I think it was about 10 aside. You know, David and Megan were the captains, and two things really stood out. One was that eventually the team in the black shirts, the black tees, they realized with Will Walsh in central midfield and Figo at left wing, that like they just stopped, like they stopped doing anything else except long diagonals from Will to Figo, so that Figo could go one.
And these are names that you don't know. Will played goalkeeper at Notre Dame, longtime MLS video extraordinaire, and has he played goalkeeper at Notre Dame. Like, so he has a right foot that can hit the ball precisely long distances. Figo is Figo.
We call him Figo for a reason, guys. Extend
all assumptions off that.
So
they hit in the diagonals, but I heard that Dave scored a banger.
Dave scored the goal of his life. So, I mean, if you listen to the show, you know that. Did you just say a wedding banger? Sorry. If you listen to the show, you know that David is a rugged and enthusiastic and maybe not entirely skilled center back.
Unfair.
Which is the position he was playing and how he was playing it. But he gets on the ball in the middle of this game, which I will say was played at a higher intensity than I expected. And Kalen and I are sitting there on the sideline watching it, because Kalen's too good for this stuff. But we're sitting on the sideline watching it and just chatting. And all of a sudden, Dave is on the ball, galloping through midfield like freaking Beckenbauer, just like blowing past the red shirt team, and he plays a 1-2 with his lifelong best friend RJ at the top of the box, who just one touches it back to David in stride, who full sprint full volley past a helpless goalkeeper. Caitlin and I, we almost died on the sideline watching that unfold. I asked David Asner, was that the best goal you've ever scored in your entire life? He's like, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, given the
about it.
Given the context, given the environment, given what it means, I mean, it's just, that's a great sign. Mm-hmm. For the success of this union, an absolutely wonderful sign.
I was slightly disappointed he did not do the Joseph Martinez, Joe Bendick celebration over the helpless Devin Plouler, who had no chance of stopping that one. David was a little more magnanimous.
To give you an understanding at home, you're like, God, who are all these name drops? I don't know who this is. Shut up. Devin Plouler, Opta. Original Opta guy, now analytics at Toronto FC. So you start to see some of these connections.
And also a college goalkeeper.
Also a college goalkeeper. Didn't want to out him there on that after letting that goal up. An amateur! Don't even worry about it. Very easy. But yeah, look, congratulations to Dave and Megan. That's a wonderful sign of things to come for them. It looked like just a wonderful weekend. And it occurred to me as I was driving home from dropping my kids off, thinking about that wedding, thinking about all the things that we've gone through as a show together and how our lives are kind of intertwined. Maybe you're at home listening to this and you're like, God, I'm hitting the fast forward 30 seconds button over and over and over just to get to the soccer. But it's extra special, I think, for me just to see us all sort of keep living and things happening in our lives and happening together. It's pretty wonderful. So let's talk about the weekend that was. It's a little ways away now, so we'll keep it pretty broad. We're also going to chat with Oscar Pareja of Orlando City, as well as Todd Donovan, the president and GM of Sacramento Republic. Because look, they're playing an Open Cup final on Wednesday. ESPN Plus, 8 p.m. Eastern. They got a pregame show, postgame show. I think Jordan Angeli is going to be there on the ground. But a trophy is being handed out, a spot in the CONCACAF Champions League is being handed out. We will dig into that game in depth. But let's start with the big news around MLS. And around the world, really, shout out to Dave and Megan, but the world's ending. It's over. It's just a matter of time. New Who has scored, and, the Riders of the Apocalypse are next. So congratulations to Sam Stachel. His watch has ended. He may move on to other Twitter themes. And Anders says, please God, don't do this. It's not worth the time. So for once, Anders, I'll stop talking about the Sounders at your request. Let's talk Paulo Nagamura. He is no longer the head coach in Houston. He did not last a full season. They are 3 points out of the wooden spoon. This season has, I don't think there were big expectations, Doyle. It wasn't like anybody was guaranteeing this team was going to make the playoffs, but I think they had bigger expectations than this. And in the end, results business, the head coach is going to be the first one to fall. But within a year, that's a pretty big signal from Pat Onstad and the organization. Ultimately, the decision comes down to Pat, who's also in his early tenure here at Houston. What did you make of this news?
Not at all surprising. We had heard whispers throughout the league over the past few months that Nagamura didn't really seem to have the locker room. And I think that's pretty apparent by the body language on the field, and then by the results. They've got, one win since Aceh's arrived? Or maybe it's two now, but he didn't play in one of them. Because he didn't play in the win over LAFC last week. So, but they have two wins in 3 months. They do not have a defined style of play that I can discern. The personnel, they don't really seem to fit together, and he wasn't really making headway on that. None of the young players really got a shot, and when the few times it did get a shot, none of them showed any significant improvement. And it all kind of added up. It felt like a guy who was maybe a little bit out of his depth trying to do this, his first year as a head coach in MLS, and kind of thrown to the deep end with a team that has not been very good for a very long time. Kept that going. They were not very good at all this year. So I'm not, even though it was officially less than a year, I didn't find it particularly surprising given everything that we've seen and everything that we have heard.
I don't want this to be, I've interacted a good bit with Naga. He is a great dude, a great personality. He has a lot of the attributes I think you would look for and a head coach in the sense that he is super competitive. He's a communicator, can do it in many languages, had success at the two level, but it felt maybe a little early for him. And that's not unique to coaches either. Like, I think we get, you know, it's easy to get enamored with the guys that just come in and it's like, oh my God, he's a genius from the jump. Like, Patrick Vieira is a guy I would think about in that case in MLS. You know, people might try to lump like a Jesse Marsh in, and like the first year in Montreal was decent for Jesse, but remember there were differences with ownership and with, in general, just it didn't work. He moved on after a single season. Like, you know, Jim Curtin's first few years, he was sort of living on the edge with Philly. Like, it often doesn't go well from the start. So I don't think this is a like, hey, this is never going to happen for Paulo. He's just not cut out for this. It's a, this was not the right situation. And when I saw it come down, and when it happens this quickly within a first season, the term I sort of go to and think about, and, you know, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's crass, maybe it's not the right way to think, because it's a term that we often hear in divorce, which is irreconcilable differences, where it's just like, people are like, how could they do this to him? Like, he's only had a partially of, he hasn't had a full season. The roster's not at a level where you'd expect XYZ out of it. And I can agree with that. Certainly, I don't think this roster is a playoff roster as it stands. And I wouldn't necessarily put all that on Pat Onsett either, because he's had to, he had a lot of, you know, he was handcuffed a little bit with what the previous regime did, the flexibility he had, the opportunity to bring players in, though they've started to change that, Ache being the high profile one. But when you make this change at this time, what it says to me is that the relationship wasn't going to get better, right? Yeah. That there was just something there that it's not like, hey, this can all be fixed if. It was just sort of like, you know, and a lot of times in a divorce, it's not like, I hate you, you're a terrible person. It's just like, we're not the right people right now for each other. And it felt like Naga and Houston are not the right people right now for each other. The results bear that out. And I think the thought to the future of, is it going to get better, didn't necessarily bear that out either. And I think that a lot, it goes back to what you're saying about sort of the tactical side. They talked a big game about wanting to be like an aggressive team, a team with an identity that Houston could get around and that fan base could be sort of like rejuvenated by. And I watch the games, I read your column, I've been thinking the same thing. I'm like, what is this? What do they hang their hat on? Like, what are they really good at?
Yeah.
What do they force other teams to deal with? And I didn't personally feel that. And again, he's a young coach. Things could change. Yeah, should I be doing the divorce references right after we talked about Megan and Dave? Probably not, but I don't worry about them. I don't worry about them. So, what do you think about the future? I mean, the future is built around Ache. That is clear. I'm, you know, a dreamer, and I'm the sort of person that wants to entertain myself when it comes to creating and making a rumor out of thin air. So Tata after the World Cup sounds awesome. I don't know what his relationship with Ache is, but if you want to play on the front foot, you want to have MLS experience, you want to get a guy that's probably pretty motivated coming out of the whatever it is situation he's in right now, pick your terrible description of acrimony. Tata would be fun, but it feels like they're probably going to go with somebody along those lines who has a connection to, you know, the city of Houston as a wider thing, you know, Latinos, etc., can speak Spanish, I would guess, and has some MLS connection as well, because there's not many Patrick Vieiras running around.
Right. I mean, getting the head coach correct is obviously, you know, massively important, maybe definitively so, for this team. But even with that, I see a roster that's kind of confused, that's a hodgepodge, that doesn't have a ton of high-end talent that works together. You know, Ache, I guess, is going to be the centerpiece, but he hasn't played like a centerpiece since he got here. You know, he has been a massive negative on the defensive side of the ball, which you can live with from a number 10, but it's tough to live with that from a guy who's kind of a 6, kind of an 8. I think they have to get him bought back in with what they do, and then they have to figure out how to start. A, marginally upgrading the, well, not maybe even marginally, significantly upgrading the rest of the roster. And then B, creating the kind of environment where young players improve. If you don't have that, then you can't win in MLS. You just can't. And even, you know, we think about Tata as a guy who was given so much in Atlanta, and he was, but like Miguel Almirón got better under Tata. Joseph Martinez got so much better on, you know,
Julian Gressel was put in a position to thrive, like, and to become who he's become.
Right. So you have to have a culture that that builds that values that. And Houston just, they haven't had that forever. Not since Kalen was on Houston, you know.
More head coaches since Dom was fired than Kansas City has had in their entire existence.
Yep.
Now look, Peter's been there for a million years at this point, but
yeah. So, we'll see. There's a team in massive flux going into the offseason.
Wing, center back, I would probably argue. I really like Coco Carrasquilla, so that was a good signing for them. But there's some work to be done this offseason on the roster. And I think, you know, Pat Onset has to know the pressure is on him for sure now to get this next hire right, to get the moves as it pertains to the roster right. Like, you know, his coaching hire didn't last a full season. And he had to make a tough decision. And now people are going to look to Pat and say, okay, well, what's the next decision you make? And is it the right one as it pertains to the manager? And you had some shackles on you as far as, you know, what your cap situation was. Well, now this is yours. What can you build? What can you create? And can you do it in conjunction with a manager to have a better product on the field than we've seen? Because Houston is, you know, we've seen moments this year where they've come alive. But they need a lot more of that. It's been a while since they've been super relevant in MLS, let alone in the city of Houston. So Ted Siegel seems like he's pushing things. We'll see what happens. But Naga out in Houston. Now they can go about looking for a head coach. So that's next on the docket for the Dynamo. Is Hani your MVP now? Luke Blackman asks, has he officially taken over as the front runner? What do you think? I think he has. I think he, you know, the head-to-head really sort of tells the tale. Now, I know it was in Nashville. They will go to Austin, and Driussi will have a chance at redemption, as will Austin. But it feels to me like right now, Hani Mukhtar is, if I had to cast a ballot, it's going to Hani right now.
Yeah, he's got 7 goals and 3 assists in his last 4 games.
When they need it most?
When they needed it most. As they're, you know, as they've gone from a team that, like, oh God, they're going to miss the playoffs, to, oh God, they might end up, you know, hosting 2 home games, you know, like and he's been great all season long. Like, he was in the discussion before this run, but like, this is literally the definition of what an MVP does. When your team is backed against the wall, the MVP, the best player on the field every single game, produces not just goals and assists, but is actually controlling the game more, getting Shaq more involved on the right side, and taking advantage when Alex Mouil is pressing, and you know, getting Jacob Schaffelberg into space so he could run and use that speed of his. Like, he's checking every box, baby. It's not running away with it at this point, but he went from, you know, if we had this conversation 2 weeks ago, we probably said, yeah, I think Driussi's got the edge, to like, there's Hani, and there's a gap after Hani at this point.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. I love that you said Jacob Schaffelberg there, because like, kind of as a joke, I tried to lead the show during the transfer window with Schaffelberg a couple weeks ago, but like, also as not a huge joke, that might be the most MLS-y like success trade signing of the year. Well done to Mike Jacobs on that one, because Jacob Schaffelberg was at Toronto FC, but never going to play. Once they got those Italians, never. Like, the dude's not going to see the field. And JDB hit us up and said, was Bob misusing Jacob Schaffelberg at TFC? I mean, Jacob Schaffelberg has as one might say, a specific set of skills. And that specific set of skills fits perfectly in this team right now. He is going to run and create space for Hani. He's taken advantage of his high leverage moments in the attacking third, which may not last. Like, let's not act like he's going to be a goal or assist every game type of guy. But he is Gary Smith type of guy to a T. Like, defend, run your socks off, be about the team shape and the team ethos. And he makes Hani better. And if you're doing that, you're a great signing. Shaq Moore has been good too, but Nashville no longer sort of in that question mark spot. Before we get to Open Cup, real quick, maybe the biggest result of the weekend, I'm putting Toronto FC in the 6 feet under, Doyle. Are you joining me? Are we mourning them? Are we throwing flowers on the coffin down there?
Yeah, I'm starting my post-mortems, you know, those columns I do every year where I choose a GIF for each team to sort of like sum up their season. And yeah, I'm starting I'm starting work on the Toronto one this week. I'm selecting a GIF and all that.
Because they have negative games in hand. They have a 3 out of 4 away games. Last one's at Philly. And to go up 2-0 at home against your arch rival and lose 4-3, bad vibes. Bad vibes. You just can't. That's a result that you just can't have if you're going to make the playoffs. Who knows? Miracles happen, but I don't think that one is going to happen. Real quick, Chicharito, what do you think about the?
You're wearing the Galaxy jersey, man.
That's true. I respect the hell out of Chicharito for doing like every single interview after that because that was just a. It's honestly an embarrassing moment. Embarrassing in the sense that it's, you know, it is like the last gasp of the game. You have a chance to get all 3 points at home to keep your team like right there on Portland's backside for that spot in the playoffs. You wouldn't be above the line, but now you have a gap you have to make up, and all it took was not hitting a really terrible Panenka, which you'd done a couple weeks before. I don't know. Shout out to Pools Camp for standing it up. But that is a tough moment. That is a tough moment for the Galaxy. It's a tough moment for Chicharito. It has to be said, he scored 2 other goals in this game, so it's not like he was bad, but they needed him to be just – they needed him to just smash it at that moment, and he didn't smash it, and what a bummer that is.
Yeah.
What a bummer that is. Okay. Last thing we have some Wilfred Nancy stuff about Coach of the Year, but we got to get to the Open Cup, so let's get to it. 8 p.m. Eastern, Wednesday night in Orlando, Orlando City, Sacramento Republic. It's been a long time, Rochester Rhinos long, since a non-MLS team won this thing. Well, Sacramento has that opportunity, but as Todd Donovan will tell you here in just a little bit, they know they're the underdogs. Give me the big picture view of this, Doyle, from your perspective. It doesn't have, I wish it had more hype right now. It doesn't, maybe it's the holiday weekend. Maybe it's the gap between games in the Open Cup, but it doesn't have the build up and the hype that I would like something like this to have, especially because it is finally what we've been asking for so long, which is not just an MLS on MLS matchup, which is interesting because it's in a final, but MLS USL Championship, MLS lower division, like there's it's what the whole competition is supposed to be about, that miracle run and that opportunity.
Yeah, I think the last time we saw a lower division team make it to the final, it was Ozzie Alonso's Charleston Battery back in 2008, right? Was that it?
That sounds right. You can wax poetic here for a second while I confirm.
I think that is the big story from a overall U.S. soccer in the United States point of view is the miracle run that Sacramento have been on. And it's a great thing because, you know, that fan base has been so loyal and so impressive over the years as they've, had a million highs and then a million really low lows. So I'm very happy for them. And they've played, very good soccer. Like they are not just hit and run. They actually try to play soccer, and they can do it at a high level, as you know it shows that they're here. It's obscuring the fact that like this is the first time in Orlando's history that they're playing for a title. Like they have an empty trophy cabinet. They've never really come all that close, unless I'm forgetting something. And even though
Open Cup final, I want to say, against Atlanta United. No, semifinal against
the
Atlanta
semifinal,
United.
Yeah.
That would be the closest.
Yeah, so this is the biggest game in their club's history. And it's come in the midst of the season that has been really up and down, and I think disappointing for most of it. But they finally sort of, I want to say, like they're not playing the greatest soccer in the world, but they're playing better soccer, and they're playing with more conviction, and they're stringing results together in the league. As Oscar Pereja, he always figures out his team, like how to get his team to do that, even when they're missing pieces, even when it looks like it's going to be a waste of a season, he always figures it out. And this is what has made him such a good coach in this league for 10 years now. But he doesn't have a ton of trophies either. Right, he's got the 2016 Supporters Shield and the 2016 U.S. Open Cup. Getting this win would, I don't want to say validate, but like it would be like a sort of even more proof of concept of what he's doing in Orlando. And I think in a way he needs that, because these fans, if you look at Orlando fans over the summer, there was a not insubstantial portion of the fan base that were saying, Perea's taken us as far as we can go. with him. Like, he does not have that next gear to get us to a higher level. And I think they're dead wrong. And I think that a way of showing that they're dead wrong would be taking home a trophy, getting into CCL, continuing to build out that roster, which has been, it's not the deepest roster in the league by any stretch, and sort of setting the groundwork for Orlando in the way that he did in Dallas, and, you know, getting that pipeline open, getting young talent in from South America and making it better, and from, you know, local kids and making it better, and putting his stamp on the team. And we've seen, like, progress in that regard over the past 2.5 years. Progress in a trophy, something better.
And something to build toward in CCL. Like, I think Oscar knows this. I chatted with him last week. Let's take a listen to that interview as he sort of guides you through what has happened this season for Orlando, what this Open Cup final means, and on the back end of that, Todd Donovan on what they hope will be another celebration for Sacramento Republic. All right, time now for an AT&T 5G call to the field. To Orlando we go. Oscar Pareja, longtime guest of this show, friend of the show, Orlando City in the Open Cup final, a huge opportunity. Profe, how are you doing? Everything good?
Oh, good, Andrew. Good to see you again. And yes, here we are in front of this big challenge of playing the final and bringing the final here to Orlando, and obviously try to win it. It's just be part of this history here, and we're very proud, and we'll be ready.
So we're recording this on the Thursday before the weekend. So those Orlando fans are otherwise listening, asking, okay, why are we talking about the weekend? Okay, this is why. But you just came off a big win against the Seattle Sounders. Four straight wins in a row. Form is exactly where you would want it to be at this time of the year. But it has to have been just a little bit stressful. No, you're leaving it late. Both within the season, maybe you might say, that you've been sort of in that playoff race the whole time, but certainly in games, a lot of late winners for this team. Has it been a little bit stressful for you?
It's always like that, Andrew. I don't remember any time that it's not like that. It's part of our job. It's Major League Soccer is demanding. It's a long journey. It's a long season. It's a lot of ups and downs, and not many teams have consistency. We always would like to be one of them, but we're not. We're battling and trying to find and get in our best way. But fortunately, at this time, we have put together good performances and good results. In spite of, you say that it's at the end, it doesn't matter. The goal at the first minute of 92 is the same, I think.
When you look at this season so far, I've had a difficult time analyzing your team. You had so many new players and big time players come in that winter transfer window to try to build, to try to get where you wanted to be and turn over the team in a little bit of way. And then it seemed like you found something with Pato more as a second forward or a 10, and then immediately he gets hurt. It feels to me like this whole season has felt a little stop start. When you evaluate the campaign, what do you attribute that lack of consistency to?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I have read your comments too. I think it's obvious that we have not been consistent on the performances. You're trying to look for the team and trying to look for that lineup who can just create that optimism on winning games and being a better spot on the standings, and obviously have a hope of winning, because I thought this is where we're aiming for. We have had a lot of stretches where we're not that team. We have been battling, but don't forget that this team is we let 4 or 5 players go last year, and important players that were part of our 2 years here, last past 2 years. And the club decided just to sell their DK, let Nani go, and the contract with Chris Mueller as well. Those 30 goals already there. And we brought players that had been adapting, not as fast as we wanted. We have a big injury with Antonio Carlos. We have had challenges. We brought a player to occupy the left spot, or the spot in the left as a left winger, and Gaston Gonzalez. And then the week that he was coming, he get hurt, and his knee can be for the whole season with us. So all those things just make me see a team who has battling a lot, and I need to recognize the effort of the players, Andrew. It's best teams sometimes are not the ones who play the best, but the ones who overcome situations. And I have to recognize that this group of players has done that, and we're battling like any other team in the league. It's not many, as I say, that have consistency.
I mean, you're battling to get through all that and still be in a position to have a home playoff game, depending on how the rest of the season goes, to be in this final as well. I think you have to give the players, yourself, I think you have to give yourselves credit. And now you have this opportunity at home in front of your fans to lift the trophy and to do something that nobody else in the MLS era at Orlando City has done. For you personally, for the club, what would it mean to see your players have that confetti come around them, to see them have that sort of that crowning moment that this club has been hungry for so long?
Right. Well, first, I see them every day in training, obviously. The last 2 years, they have achieved as well things that haven't been achieved before here. We have been trying to be protagonists of the league and not being a team who is in the bottom. It's not an easy task with all the challenges that we have this year. And still the boys have found the ways to get there and be fighting for qualification spots. Now they have this opportunity to play their second final in 2 years and a half. And a team that never been done that. I think they need a lot of credit on that part. And that's what I recognize, that they're doing a fantastic job on overcoming things that sometimes people don't recognize, or journalists. And at this point, we're going to be trying to get things done, and the boys are they're conscious about what they are and what they can do, and what is this opportunity means for them. But I would love Andrew to get this trophy for Orlando so bad, and the players want it as well. And it would be a great moment. But you got a battle. It doesn't stop. The battle doesn't stop, and it's not going to be any easy either.
You are the favorites. I think it's, you know, Sacramento wants everyone to say that you're the favorites, no doubt about that. But when you look at MLS versus USL, and, you know, just simply the quality of player, the budgets, everything else, being at home, does that add anything to this? Is there any additional pressure that comes from, you know, being sort of the MLS team against the USL team at your own stadium?
It's a final. The protagonism of the final, obviously, it could have given to the MLS team, of course. And we assume that as a normal way to think is normal, and we're ambitious as well, and we understand our responsibility. But we have a lot of respect for Sacramento too. I think they have done a terrific job on getting in the final, and with that respect, we're going to get in front of them. That is not favorites at this moment. It's the final. We're going to take it very professionally. We're going to take it with the responsibility that the match require, Andrew, and then that's it.
Can I ask you about a few of these players that you've added that I've been particularly impressed by? And I think one guy that we're trying to get a little bit of, a little bit of narrative around, a little bit of respect for, is Cesar Araujo. I mean, he has been an unbelievable young midfielder to come into this league. Tell me what you saw in him as you prepared to sign him, and what you've seen so far from him in purple this year.
Cesar has brought a personality in the middle of the field. He's not a very vocal player though, but I think his habits on the training ground, his habits on, around the team, and the way he plays every single minute is fantastic. And for us, has been a great addition. I see a player there that I like to work with every single day, and that transmitted good energy in our clubs. We don't negotiate the generosity, and we don't negotiate that effort. And when I'm around these players, is I have a good identification. And so Cesar is one of them. I thought you're spot on and naming him. It has been a great value for us.
What about the development of Facundo? It seemed like he came in. It took him maybe a little bit more time to get comfortable. Did you see that as well? But we're starting to see the quality that we knew he had, that you signed him for, come out more and more and more in these last few weeks.
Andrew, he's a 21 years old player. He came to the league from a very distinct league. And what I have seen so far in Facu is a lot of progression. It's a player who has understanding the league. I'm happy to see that the evolution from him through the games, I think, has been noticeable. I'm happy to see him at this time of the year just take the team in his shoulders. We ask him to be more heavy in the last third. Oh, we have been lacking of that and during the season. And a player like him at this time is just bringing us that idea, as he's bringing us that resolution. And I can tell what you said as well, Andrew. I think he has evolved him a lot, and he knows much more the league. And I'm proud. He has been progressing a lot.
I think, Oscar, you're in a position that you're able to help a lot of people out there understand maybe that transition for young players, and in particular young players from South America, and making this move. You've been helping players along that path for a long, long time now. What do we not think about, journalists, fans, people that are watching and evaluating young players, as you said, as they come into the league? Because it's easy to forget when you see the transfer fees that are now at the level that they are, the expectations become that much bigger. But ultimately, you have a 21-year-old, maybe an 18-year-old, 19-year-old individual who is switching countries. And you mentioned sort of a distinct league that they're coming from into another league that has its own distinct qualities, into another culture, into another team. What do people who are trying to judge the progression and the performances of young players, particularly, as I said, South America to MLS, need to remember as they watch those games and those players?
Right. It's a good question, Andrew, or a great comment too, because then sometimes the people or the journalists don't understand what it means adaptation to a league. Coming from a different country that they don't even speak the language first. Second, that the dynamics of Major League Soccer are very demanding, and at once it's a challenge for them. I came to Major League Soccer at the age of 26, and 3 months in, they trade me. That means that I was not doing any good, and I wanted to go so bad to Colombia after those 3 months, because I didn't understand. And now this has been 25 years ago, but the habits, the culture, the country, the climate, the company is not an easy thing for a 20, 21 years old player. Forget that they're talented. And when they go to Europe, it happens the same, especially with South Americans. And so when I see Facu reacting and taking the team in his shoulder now, and I'm very proud of him. I really value the adaptation of the players. I know they make a big effort to glue together with the other players, players with the league and with such a responsibility, because they don't come in a spot that they are one more player. They're the DPs and they're supposed to be the best, and then sometimes it's heavier. But he's good. He's doing well. A very professional. He's always happy. He looks like he's playing in the streets of Uruguay every day. So it makes us feel optimistic.
Your experience, your history with this league, as you just sort of laid out with people, if they don't know, and you know, I'd be shocked if our listeners don't. I hope they understand how deep this goes for you. You have a unique place to sort of commentate on the growth and the way this league has changed. Even in the last couple of years, it can be unrecognizable to those of us that spend our lives around it every day. If you had to go, if you were going back to Colombia now, or you're talking to a player or an agent or a coach or whatever it is, and they're asking, okay, what is MLS in the year 2022? How would you describe what this league is to people that maybe don't have the same intimate knowledge that we do?
It is a very demanding league. The people don't recognize all the time. It is a very dynamic, and now much more tactical, and the strategics for the teams and coaches has been growing tremendously. It's a league very difficult to adapt, because the dynamic and the speed and the physicality, and also because there is a very multicultural, and that itself is a big challenge for any foreign player that comes here. To the South Americans, especially, as you mentioned, the Colombians, for example, the first thing that I said is just the adaptation to the culture is not an easy job. You got to go to the Major League Soccer and match every single aspect that you don't used to. First, professionalism. Second, hard work, generosity, dynamic. You got to match that, because that's the culture in America, and that's what they do. And starting from there, and then you can bring your talent and make the difference, and you will be very welcome. But if you don't have that hard work spirit, and you don't have that generosity to work together as a team, and your ego is bigger than yourself, it's going to be a challenge. That I would say.
Before I let you go, as you look to the rest of the season, and obviously this is what's standing in front of you. You know, off this weekend, and that's a good scheduling move by MLS, I think, and also for Orlando City, clearly, to be fresh. But you have the playoffs coming as well. Where do you see Orlando City going? What is sort of the state of your project right now, and where do you envision this being over the course of this year and the coming years? What do you want it to be?
I want it to be first, but now I'm fifth. And that's where we are. Andre, we ambition at the beginning of the season, like any other team in Major League Soccer, to be the best team in the league. We wanted to be way much better than the prior year, but we have been very inconsistent, didn't. But we have a condition that I have to give credit to the players, and is that we are adapting, that we are reacting, that we're finding our ways, not just to qualify, but just to probably dream for more. We're not the best team in the league. We're not among the best team in the league, but we are a team with character, and that's us, you know, that we will fight with those tools. It's a long league. It's 34 games plus. And the only thing that I have to say today is that we are in the qualification spot, and we're playing the final in the cup. And that's a lot for this group, and we're proud.
Still more to come. Maybe lifting that cup at home, no less, would be an amazing moment for Orlando City. And who knows what can happen in the playoffs, Profe. Sometimes, you know, a guy like Rodrigo Schlegel's pulling on the goalkeeper gloves, and you're making memories. that last a lifetime, right? So thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to watching the game and seeing if Orlando City can make history. Thank you.
No, Andrew, thanks for inviting me to the program. Please say hello to Matt as well. And I follow you on the things too. You made us all feel proud about this league. And we will keep working. Hopefully we can bring the trophy, not just for Orlando, but for Major League Soccer. We understand our responsibility, and we will do anything possible to make it happen.
Huge final for Orlando, Open Cup. Thank you so much, Coach. We appreciate you.
Awesome, Andrew. Thank you so much.
All right, it's AT&T 5G call to the field to Northern California. They're getting on a plane very, very soon to head all the way across country for the U.S. Open Cup final in Orlando. But Sacramento Republic FC's president and GM, Todd Donovan, is with us in MLS. I would venture to say legend, Todd. Do you accept legend status in these hallowed halls?
You'll never hear me say it, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah, it's okay. That's the best way to become a legend. You don't, like, if you're out here crowing about it, nobody's going to say that. But if you just show the rings off, that's an easy way to guarantee your spot. What would this ring mean to you, man? A different one. You've got the MLS Cup rings. What would this Open Cup with this Sacramento team mean to you?
Yeah, it means so much. I think the run that in the tournament we've had has been really, really special. This obviously isn't something that happens often. It happens, you know, once every couple decades, frankly. So we know that this is rarefied air, and we're enjoying it. We're enjoying this, the tournament. We're enjoying the challenge. Our guys have stepped up time and time again. So no question, it's very, it's been a satisfying tournament so far, but we got one big one to go.
You don't want to claim legend for yourself. Would you say that Sacramento are underdogs, or is that not fair to your team and what they've accomplished?
I think that's, it's pretty clear that we're heavy underdogs, and that's okay. I mean, we were underdogs against the Earthquakes. We were underdogs against the Galaxy in LA. We were underdogs against four-time champion Sporting Kansas City. So that's nothing new to us. We're comfortable in that role, and we know that that's how it's going to be going into this game, where, you know, Orlando also is the hottest team in MLS right now. I think four straight wins and a big one that they're coming off of, that they, came back two goals down and beat a very good Seattle Sounders team. So they're flying high. They're a very confident team, and they've been getting a lot of good results. So we know they're going to have their absolute best. And, listening to the broadcast, this is, from them, their biggest game in their history as well. So this is going to be a huge test for us.
What is the moment that stands out to you in this run? The Portland Timbers U23s in the second round, Central Valley Fuego FC. God, I love the Open Cup. Just saying that club name out loud is a wonderful thing for me. Phoenix Rising, so you have a USL challenge there. Then Quakes, Galaxy, those are Todd Donovan teams that you got to knock off. And then Sporting Kansas City and penalties. Is there a moment? Is there like a, you're in the box, you guys are jumping up and down, you're like an after party? Give me some color, man. I need some color.
You know, we've celebrated every single win. Central Valley was a very tough game for us. We didn't score till late. We were the Goliaths in that game and the favorites. And Central Valley was on a very good run in League One. And, it took, 80 minutes for us to get a goal there. And it was a tough game. So, that was a big one going against Phoenix. They've been perennial favorites in USL over the last several years. So that was a tough game. We got over the hump there. And then it was on to the Earthquakes, who we've never beaten in the Open Cup. We've always played them in San Jose. So to be able to host them, I think we had 2 weeks to sell that game, turn around on a Wednesday and sold it out. Our fans showed up in huge force, which was really, really cool. And the guys, rose to the occasion. It was great. So then, we were rewarded with an away trip to LA Galaxy, who were coming off kind of a long break. An extended break, for international duty, and hadn't played in a few weeks. Then they played, I think, the Timbers leading up to us. And you know, had their eyes on this competition and put out a full strength lineup that, you know, in their building, we knew again, it was going to be a really, you know, we're going to have to be at our best. But what was cool about LA, we, you know, our owner, Kevin Nagel, brought our whole staff down, paid for our staff to come down. We rented an in and out truck in the park and, you know, really enjoyed it, frankly. And I think it was a club wide thing and, you know, not just on the field, but I think off. It was a really cool moment. And then, you know, obviously the semifinal against Sporting Kansas City was, you know, we knew how important the tournament is to them. They've showed that over and over and, you know, been successful in the tournament, you know, winning it four times, I think more than or as much as anyone else over the, you know, recent span. And, you know, that going down to penalties, the way that ended with, you know, Malik Foster doing a Panenka, big save by our goalkeeper, Danny Vitiello on the next one. And then Rodrigo Lopez, stepping up and capping it off. It was a crescendo and as loud as I've ever heard, a stadium that I've been a part of.
So you mentioned you'd celebrate every single one. How hard are we going here after these games? Like, I think sounds like LA may have been a peak, you know, you're on the road, you got the entire, you know, the whole front office. You know, are we talking about dragging, you know, racks into the hotel, you know, bar? Are we, because I have experience with some of these things. Sometimes you got to make do late at night. You're all in the same hotel. What's that look like?
You know, it's funny, like each one of these games, you know, since it is such an extended tournament, what I just went through, that was, you know, over 4 months, essentially. So you're not talking about, hey, you got a game, you know, again, in a couple of weeks, maybe in the early stages of the tournament. But, you know, from the semifinal to the final, it'll be 6 weeks. I think it was 4 weeks in between Galaxy and Sporting Kansas City. So you do want to take a moment. And these are huge moments for our club. I mean, this is not something that's supposed to happen. It's not something that does happen regularly. So why not enjoy it? And our team has. So, yeah, there's no question. We had a little fun, you know, certainly after all of them. You know, in different ways, different on the road and different at home. And, you know, and the idea is that, you know, enjoy those moments because they don't come around often, but, you know, you have plenty of time to kind of prepare for the next one. And, you know, all eyes now for us are on, you know, the final.
Trying to become, what would be the next Rochester Rhinos, really, like they were the last ones to do this. And we're talking about, you know, decades ago. We can tell that, you know, God, we love Apple products on this show now, Todd. So it's just a very apt jump in with the Apple Watch. Tell me about Rodrigo Lopez. Tell me about this team for those listeners out there on our side that are very focused on MLS. You guys, I think, are in the top four in the Western Conference or right around there right now in USL. Obviously, have made it this far. You have quality, you have experience. Tell me about your team.
Yeah, so I mean, our team, we really retooled quite a bit this past offseason, brought in 16 new players on a roster of 21. So you're talking about, you know, a massive chunk of the roster. Our roster rules are fairly open. And so you are able to, you know, from a mechanism standpoint, able to make changes pretty quickly. And we really focused and targeted on trying to get a couple of things right. I think, you know, certainly you want to have a winning team, but we wanted to, you know, start with a good, strong group of characters. And, you know, Sacramento is the indomitable city. We're the indomitable club. Essentially, that means resilience. That means perseverance, not giving up. And really, you know, relishing in that underdog role and saying, hey, no matter what's thrown at us, whatever adversity comes our way, we're going to push through it. So we tried to recruit that in our team and in our players and, you know, ultimately got a group together that has bonded really quickly. I think come together really quickly. There's always going to be ups and downs in any season. But I think, you know, with a new group like we have, we expected, you know, probably even more than, you know, we expected it to take a little longer than it has. So we're really pleased with the cast of characters that we have. They push each other. They know how to interact in the right ways off the field, but also on the field. And they can hold each other accountable. They can put an arm around when they need to do that. But it's a tough group, and you know they haven't been fazed by anything in the tournament at this point. They've stepped up and, you know, really had each other's back. So that's what we wanted to focus on, and you know, from back to front. We wanted more leaders. We wanted a little more experience. That was part of bringing back Rodrigo Lopez, which you mentioned. He's a club legend, you know, was back in 2014 when the club started, you know, had the miracle at Bonnie with his free kick, penalty kick, and taking the team to a championship in its first season. And, you know, bringing him back into the fold. Now he's 35, playing the best soccer of his career, frankly. I don't know how he does it, you know, but he's been incredible for us, not just on the field, but off. And he's our captain and our leader and has really been huge for us.
So there was a time, Todd, and obviously I'm sitting here wearing my Sacramento to MLS hat, and I have the jersey, and my wife's family is from there, and I was so excited, and my wife's family was so excited. I mean, it seemed like every time I talked to them, they were like, all right, when's this happening? Are you moving back for the Republic, going to MLS? So, like, what's up with the stadium? There was a time where Republic was just on the lips of the soccer conversation all the time, which is not to say that you're not now. You're this huge story still, but maybe not in the same MLS context. Where is the club right now from your perspective? Is MLS still a dream? And I saw that a new stadium is going up. You had the site, and that site is being built on. There's going to be a beautiful new soccer-specific facility in Sacramento for this club.
Yeah, I think you said it well. Like, MLS, I think this offseason, we wanted to really take destiny in our own hands. And we said we can do that in two ways. We can focus on the here and now. We can talk about our team. You know, that we have put a winning product on the field, you know, and have something that the fans can cheer for, and then build a new stadium, you know, downtown, which is what we're going to do. So for us, it's about moving the club forward. It's not, you know, our focus isn't on MLS. Those, a lot of that is out of our control. We'll certainly keep our options open and, you know, build a stadium that can be expandable and, you know, have the ability to, you know, grow as our club grows and as we go. So I think for us, it's about, you know, doing those things and, you know, again, kind of taking control back a little bit, and not waiting around. I think that was the biggest thing for the club, and our fans have rewarded that in a major way. They've come back in record numbers. We've sold out, you know, multiple games, and really, I think, reignited the fan base, which is the reason this club got on the map in the first place, was that crazy fan base, you know, getting 20,000 fans, you know, in the first, you know, when the club first started. That's what people noticed. And that's why Sacramento became an instant hit. That's why Rochester back in the late 90s was also always on that conversation, because they had a great fan base. They had, you know, big crowds. And that's certainly something that you can't replicate.
Before I let you go, Todd, I mean, we're always curious about the career path of former MLSers. President, GM, you're running a club. Was this always the goal, always the dream? What's it been like to transition from playing days? And this is not your first sort of job on this level in Northern California, but into this job. What are the difficulties? What do you enjoy? What's it like for you?
I love it. It took me a while to figure out what I loved about soccer, what I loved about playing. You know, and really it became, you know, it was about being part of a team and being part of something bigger than you, you know. And so from, you know, when I was done playing, being able to be a general manager or president, you're able to impact the team to bring in, you know, good people, to try and get the best out of those people. What better way to kind of scratch that competitive itch than to be part of that? And, you know, we've got a team on the field, but we've also got a team in our office and with our staff. And I love that. I love the, you know, the people aspect of the job. That to me is the most important part of the job. And, you know, the challenges are endless. I mean, you wake up every single day and there is, you might have a schedule, you might have an idea of how it's going to go, but you're always going to have things come up that you don't know, because you're dealing with people, you're dealing with things that can change, and it's so diverse and different every single day. It's invigorating, because you got to be on, you got to be ready, and you got to be up for the challenge. So I love it. I'm able to stay competitive every single day, and you know, not on the field anymore, but that's okay. I have zero remorse about that. I played as long as I possibly could have. My body gave everything it could. And, you know, there came a point where I knew it was time to go. And, you know, I love being on this side of it now. It's so satisfying. And, you know, again, the tournament that this club has had to be part of, you know, a championship of the Deltas, it's, you know, it's so fun for me every single day.
Are you taking the whole squad to Orlando? I mean, y'all went to L.A. That wasn't even the final. Feels like the whole shebang needs to go to Orlando. How many – do you have, like, a trip planned for fans? Like, what should we see in the stands from the Republic faithful?
Yeah, you'll see some Old Glory red in the stands. We got a good amount of fans bought tickets. We were taking our whole staff. You know, the players have a huge contingent coming, so we are going to be well represented. We're going to be loud. We're having a watch party in Sacramento. There's already thousands of people that are going to be coming to that downtown at Cesar Chavez Plaza. It is a big deal here, and I think really caught the imagination of, you know, not just folks in Sacramento, but I think nationally we love and appreciate all the you know, nice messages we've gotten from folks that can identify with the Sacramento story and that underdog story. It's a lot of fun.
Don't want to put my, you know, I guess I'm wearing a Sacramento hat and a Sacramento jersey. While I respect Orlando fans and their club and their desire to have that trophy, a little bit of my heart is in Northern California. So underdog stories are a lot of fun, and we'll see if this one pays off. Todd, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, Andrew. Good chatting with you.
I thought Oscar's interview and Todd's as well was very interesting, just sort of in his acknowledgement of the difficulty of this year and of the turnover in personnel, some of the injuries that they've suffered, and what this means and how he sort of knows that some of that pressure has been on them. We'll see what they can do. What's your prediction? Todd says, hey, we're underdogs, man. Look at the form that Orlando in, and I agree. At Orlando, that's a tough one. That's cross-country trip for Sacramento. I think Orlando's going to win.
I think Orlando's going to win as well. It doesn't take anything away from what Sacramento have accomplished this year, and it's certain, like, this one's not over as soon as the ball is kicked. Like, Orlando's going to have to go out there and perform, but they're substantial favorites. They have been playing better. They do have a significant talent advantage. They do have a significant experience advantage as well.
They have Schlegel if it goes to PKs.
Right. Would be devastating for them if they did not win this. Like, they have to get this done.
8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Plus, pre- and post-game show in Orlando, U.S. Open Cup Final, CCL spot on the line, Orlando City, Sacramento Republic. On Thursday, we will be here to break it all down. That's been the show, man. Wish Dave congratulations. Pretend like I didn't talk about divorce for 5 minutes on this show at Empire Goss. It is Jersey Week as well. We forgot to mention that. Gonzalo here has done a wonderful show on secondary duty. He's wearing the Inter Miami kit today, which the pink one I love. I've not been able to convince anybody to give me that one, but I do have the one that is they're sitting on my shrine usually, which is this LA Galaxy home kit, which now has some Panenka shame in it as well, but I still love it. Go check that out. Free shipping on jerseys at MLSstore.com. We will be back on Thursday. I also forgot to mention that full Greg Berhalter interview comes out tomorrow right here on the Extra Time feed and MLS YouTube. So check that out. I think you'll really enjoy it, and we'll see you very, very soon. Adios.